Mark, we now speak to Professor Lyle White of the Gibbs Business School and the Brentes Foundation, talking about emerging economies and Latin America. Good morning again, Lyle. Where are we now between U.S. and Venezuelan relations? Because Joe Biden has now reimposed sanctions on Venezuela.
Yeah, morning, listeners. And yeah, true to their word, the Biden administration announced last week it will now reimpose oil sector sanctions on Venezuela. And this is after 6 months hiatus. Because President Nicolas Maduro's government has backed away from a commitment to hold free and fair presidential elections, which are scheduled for this July. We reminded that the U.S. lifted those sanctions 6 months ago because they had these long-standing sanctions with Venezuela. But Maduro's government has since banned opposition leader Maria Machado. Now she was one of the front runners, and she was banned from the presidential race. And her chosen replacement was also forbidden from running in the election. But the interesting part about the story, Lester, is that when it comes to the actual economics of this, and U.S. oil giant Chevron will be permitted to keep a joint venture with Venezuela's national oil company. And why? Well, let's look at the calendar. Biden's got an election to win in 7 months' time. Venezuela is a major oil producer, and the U.S. wants to avoid giving oil markets any more reason to worry, with obviously the Middle East jitters and a recovering China, which is set to guzzle more crude oil for the rest of this year. So while Joe Biden can no longer pretend Venezuelans or Venezuela's people will have a real choice in their election, he's got some hard choices to make for his own future, and this is just one of them.
And then let's stay with Venezuela, because there's a conservation mystery in that country.
Yeah, so as the political future hangs in the balance in Venezuela, so does the fate of its sea turtle populations. Over the past year, conservationists in an area called, or a town called La Sabana, on the country's coast, which is also home to four of the seven sea turtle species on Earth. They noticed that many of the reptiles were dying, and conservationists were unable to discover the silent killer until a Washington Post reporter began to research the problem. They spoke to experts elsewhere in Venezuela, who were studying an invasive species of ocean grass known as beach cabbage or sea lettuce. And this information was relayed onto the conservationists in La Sabana, who have attempted now to control that growth. Venezuela's environmental officials have been informed about the invasive species and said they would work to eradicate it, but local activists claim that much is yet to begin or to be done. But meanwhile, I suppose the local residents of La Sabana are eagerly waiting the sea turtles, who will lay eggs along that coastline. And obviously it's a very, very big story in the conservation world because, wow, four of the seven sea turtle species on Earth found just in that one area.
And then finally, Rio's tech summit is bigger and better than before. It's driving new industry and fresh investment in Latin America.
Yeah, and this is a fascinating story on how this has changed in Latin America over the last 3 or 4 years, and I think really, really instructive for South Africa. It's an interesting one for South Africa. There's around 34,000 people from more than 100 countries descended on Rio de Janeiro last week for the second Web Summit Rio. The event, which highlights Latin America's startup scene, has quickly become the region's largest tech conference. Investors listen to new companies from Mexico all the way down to Chile pitch products and services. And last month, incidentally, another startup conference in the Brazilian city of Porto Alegre, that drew 23,000 people. So people are really excited and enthused by the startup scene. And it's also the way Latin America's startup scene is now starting to shape the new economy and development over the next decade. Dozens of startups in the region have grown to be worth well over $1 billion, in part driven by the boost during COVID-19. You know, people were increasingly reliant on technology, access to healthcare, and to receive their pandemic stimulus money. Latin America's largest tech startups are concentrated in the financial sector, such as Brazil's Nubank and Mexico's Bitso. It could also be a similar thing to South Africa in this case, because it could be regulatory requirements that are now being reviewed. But also, I suppose many people in the region lack that conventional banking account, but they've got a smartphone, so the fintechs have capitalized on this mismatch. But the other areas, not surprisingly, climate tech companies have also attracted increased funding, as has AI. Startups have the potential to make Latin America's business environment more competitive, and the ability to do so often depends on the country's regulatory environments. But many startups are also shaping government regulations themselves. We see this with solar in Brazil, where startups are actually driving a new type of behavior through incentives. And there was a large session at the summit, and this is where I think it becomes quite interesting for a country like South Africa. This was devoted to how G20 countries can adopt policies that facilitate healthy environments for startups. So central banks in countries like Colombia and Brazil have supported the new fintech landscape by running tests of regulations that could be appropriated for new types of financial products. I think those are the types of conversations we yearn for here, Lester. And now we see in our cousins across the Atlantic doing just that and really reshaping their new economy. Mm.
Really appreciate your time. Professor Lyle White of the Gibbs Business School, also the Brentes Foundation, back with us again in 2 weeks' time.